Item C is the legislative update. This is a briefing, and I think Ann Larson is going to lead us through this section. Ann?
Who?
Just doing a little shifting in here.
Remember, I'm on a conference call.
Are you? Good morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
For the record, Ann Larson, legislative liaison. So we are getting to the end of week five. It's been another busy week. I hope you all received the documents I sent out last night. We're getting less and less bills, actually, as we get closer to cutoff. I did provide a little bit, a snapshot of the cutoff calendar. It's a 105-day session, and we're all shooting for April 28th to be out of here. I don't know how likely that is. But our first cutoff calendar date is February 22nd, and so that's next week Friday. So the big push these last 2 weeks are to get all of our policy bills out of the policy committees, get them into the fiscal committee. They then have one more week to get out of fiscal committee and get out to the floor and then move to the other houses. So far, all of our bills are doing reasonably well. Our license revocation bill, both of them have moved to rules, both in the Senate and the House. I've asked on the Senate side for Senator Sheldon to pull the Senate bill, so it's likely that's going to be the first of our agency request bills to come off the floor. We have our Hunter education bill that's already been referred to House Appropriations and General Government. You'll see on next week that we have that scheduled for a public hearing, and we're anticipating good support for that, as well as that it will likely come out of the floor and then likely go straight to House floor. The Senate bill, however, has not yet come out of Senate Natural Resource and Parks. I don't think that there's necessarily a problem with it. There are, you know, some folks still talking about the minimum age requirement, but I do think that they are going to exec it out of Senate Natural Resource and Parks, and then that would move on to Ways and Means before going to the floor. But it did not get exec'd out. I think I had a misprint on the little thing that I sent over to you folks. Finally, our Wolf bills. We had on Tuesday on the House side for the Wolf bills being scheduled to come out of House Agriculture and Natural Resource, but they were pulled. And speaking to the chair of the committee, he was concerned that he didn't have the votes to get those out of the committee. He thought that the Republicans were going to hold up those bills. And speaking to the Republicans, they have no problems with the bills, and so the bills are still likely to move out. I think there was a little bit of horse trading happening. There are several bills at play right now. Some we like. Some we don't, some the Republicans like, some the Democrats like, and so I think the Republicans were trying to hold their votes to get some of the bills that they would like out as kind of a negotiating point. For the Wolf bills that came out of the Senate last night, it was kind of a big day. In fact, the chair stopped the hearing just to get the Wolf bills out and then continued on with the public hearing, which was DNR's agency request bill, which was a little odd. I think he really wanted to get these things moving and getting referred to different House and the appropriation committees. We did have our 5193, which is our agency request for the carnivore bill. It was exec'd last night. It had a couple different amendments to it, but they were all things where we worked with the folks in committee, so they were all favorable amendments from our part. One of it was that we had a dedicated account that unspent funds would be rolling over each year. I think we had that in our original request, but it was stripped out for the agency request when it went through the governor's process. That has been put back in. And then also another amendment to that is any revenues that came in from the license plates would also be able to be used for livestock reimbursement funding. The other two bills that were Senator Smith's bills were 5187. That one would protect livestock against predator attacks. That would require that the commission establish rules that would allow an owner of the livestock to take a wolf, regardless of its classification. We did work with the prime sponsor of that bill. It originally said any apex mammalian predator. We limited the scope of that bill to just wolves, and then they made another amendment, whereas they could add dogs and cats, so domestic pets, as part of that. If they were in, the wolf was in attacking your dog, then you could also take that wolf as well. 5188 had to do, it was another one of Senator Smith's bills, imminent threats to livestock, and that would authorize the county authority to declare an imminent threat to commercial livestock caused by wolves, and then authorize them to take lethally remove those wolves by the county law enforcement, essentially. That one moved out as well. I know that when it hits the House, they're going to have some challenges getting that through. When I've talked to some of the Democrats on the House side, they're adamantly opposed to seeing that bill move forward. And I know there's quite a few concerns over Senate Bill 51, which has to do with protecting your livestock. So those are the three bills that are at play at the Senate. As far as in the House, like I said, they did not exec any of the bills out, but I do anticipate they'll get them out early next week. As far as we're all concerned, 1219, which is our agency request bill, is likely dead. I do not think that the House is going to move that forward. And the reason why is there's a lot of concern about the designation of wolf as a big game species. Cattlemen Association, as well as the Humane Society, the U.S. Humane Society, have been working scenes in negotiation, and they just can't come to an agreement on that designation. We looked at possibly running an independent bill that only, it was like a standalone bill that would only have that designation to keep that portion alive in the House, but at the end of the day, Representative Litton as well as Representative Kretz decided not to move those pieces forward. We do have a couple of the bills still alive. House Bill 1500, which is dropped by Litton and supported by Representative Kretz. That would create a wolf license plate that's very similar to what we have in our agency request bill. So they're taking essentially pieces of our agency request, the pieces that they like, and moving those forward. That bill actually went to House Transportation and was exec'd out yesterday. So I think that's a really strong indication that the House is supportive of us getting a new special license plate. I know in previous years we had some concerns of Representative Cliburn and Senator Haugen wanting us to get any new plate, but that's a good indication that we're likely to see this new plate moving forward as a revenue mechanism for managing wolves. The other bill was House Bill 1501. That was also dropped by Representative Litton and then supported by Representative Kretz. And again, that has components of our agency request bill. First and foremost, it has the $50,000 coming from the state wildlife to pay for livestock reimbursement. It also, again, creates that account that's independent and non-appropriated, and those funds would roll over each year. It also has, again, this wolf license plate, and it creates a new wolf conflict account. So it has a couple of the pieces that are some that are new from our agency request. Another one that's kind of a new piece of it is that we would pay market value for any livestock that was taken by wolves, as opposed to what's in statute that is actually listing a specific amount. We've been supportive of that idea as well. Is there any questions on the wolf bill? Take a little.
And are there any hunting organizations supporting any of these wolf bills?
Hunter Heritage has said that they're supportive, but I do not think that they are coming out vocally in support of the legislation. At this time, negotiations are really between Humane Society and the Cattlemen Association. And Cattlemen Association support actually all five of the bills that I mentioned. And Humane Society, go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Vice Chair, is Mr. Carpenter.
Yes, Mr. Carpenter.
And I just have one question. It might be a bit humorous, but how is our dear friend Senator Ranker reacting to the commentary about introducing wolves on Orcas Island?
He has made a couple public statements that Representative Kretz's bill is just plain stupid and a waste of time. I've read that. I have heard that he hasn't really engaged in any of the wolf public hearings that have come through. I've seen him in the back of the room on one instance, but, you know, I really have not seen a lot of him. I think he's working a little bit behind the scenes in his caucus. I have heard that any bill that comes out on the Senate floor, a bill that would require livestock owners to sign into a cooperative agreement, which we're already doing, but it would kind of force their hand, and I think it would be more of a poke to the livestock operators, and speaking to Dave Ware, than actually help with the situation that we're doing, because we're already doing it. So it's putting statutory authority, requiring him to do that, and then to do all of these steps for non-lethal. And again, we're already doing those things, so to put it in statute is a little bit of a poke in the eye. If those kind of amendments do go through on any of the wolf bills, I don't think that it's likely they'll be supported, because again, the coalition, which includes the Republicans and the two Democrats on the Senate side, are more likely to vote for the wolf bills as they stand right now.
Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chair, this is Commissioner Kaney.
Commissioner Kaney?
I'm kind of trying to make sense of it. So with 1219 dead, does 1500 and 1501 take most of what we were looking for in 1219 and accomplish that?
That's correct. In fact, 1500 is pretty, so 1501 has everything in it except for the designation of big game. And then just the license plate, and it's moving as a standalone, even though it's a duplicate, that are in 1501.
And so would one or the other of these take center stage in the end, but both of them wouldn't necessarily pass?
Correct. And if they did, okay. What happens is that the code revisor actually makes them that they're consistent with each other.
So all we've really lost without getting the game, big game status, is we don't have as big a fine for poaching, and we don't take that step that's going to need to be taken eventually to move wolves into a big game status.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. And just so you're also aware, the Senate Bill 5193 was amended to mirror the components of 1501, which is in the House, but 5193 still has the big game statute designation. So we have it alive in one of the bills. Unfortunately, with 1500 and 1501 in the House, because of the limited scope of title, I can't amend it back in. So we essentially lose that ability on the House bills, but we still have it alive on the Senate.
Okay.
Any other questions? In addition to the wolf bills, we had a big day for Discover Pass. Again, right after the wolf bills passed out of Senate Natural Resources and Parks, we saw the Discover Pass, four different Discover Pass bills come up and get voted out. The first bill was 5097, and that would allow spouses to combine their voluntary hours for credit as a Discover Pass. This is going to have a small fiscal impact to the revenues collected, but it's pretty small. And another one, 5391, would allow for an exemption to ORVs. 5084 allowed disabled vets who have a lifetime disabled vet pass who already receive an exemption on parks to receive an exemption for all lands, and the pass for Discover Pass would only cost $5 for those individuals. Again, it's going to have a fiscal note associated with that. And then finally, Hargrove has kind of been the prime person working a lot of the Discover Pass issues in addition to Senator Pearson, and he had a bill that essentially memorialized an MOU on how the pass was currently being enforced as a parking pass rather than as driving through the different state lands. He's put that in statute. It's something that we've been supportive of what he's been doing. He had another part of the bill that had a discount for hunters and fishers. Essentially, it would provide a $10 discount for hunters and fishers for buying a Discover Pass if they bought it with their hunting and fishing license. He took that out of the bill because I think there was over $1 million fiscal impact that was going to hit all three agencies. One other thing, what he did to that bill is he included bundling language, and we've been working pretty closely with a business plan recommendation, and that business plan recommend that we allow for other opportunities and potentially bundle the Discover Pass for sales, like, for example, going to Costco or other places like that. And I think that there's been a lot of support in the Senate for that type of expanding our market. And so pretty much at all the meetings that I've had, overwhelming support. Senator Hargrove amended it into his bill, and I think it's likely going to cross the finish line. Is there any questions on the Discover Pass bills at this point?
Hey, Jim.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Commissioner Perry.
Thank you. I guess I wanted to express my concern for not having some kind of a discount for hunters and fishers. They have largely paid for those lands and certainly pay for the upkeep of those properties. And it seems to me like giving them some kind of a break or free pass with the purchase of hunting and fishing licenses like we have in the past for at least apartment land is more than being fair on the thing. I realize there's a fiscal impact, but those people are already paying a huge amount, and to throw this on top seems to me like it's too much.
And I may have not been...
I guess,
just to clarify, and I'm sorry, I wasn't very clear on that. They actually do receive...
No.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Didn't mean
to... Hello? I'm finished. I'd like to hear your comments on that.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I may not have been very clear on that. Right now, hunters and fishers actually receive a free vehicle access pass, and that vehicle access pass can be used solely for fish and wildlife lands. And that is, in fact, this is legislation that had passed from a previous years in recognition that hunters and fishers pay part of their license fee to use our lands. The additional amendment that Senator Hargrove had was that hunters and fishers, in addition to receiving this discount for fish and wildlife lands, would receive a discount for using DNR lands as well as parks, and that would come at $10 for the Discover Pass. It was only strictly looking at a discount for Discover Pass, but it was not taking away the vehicle access pass. Does that help clarify?
Wait a minute. There's a difference between there's essentially two Discover Passes. Is that what you're saying?
No, there's not two Discover Passes. We have, in current statute, a Vehicle Access Pass and a Discover Pass. Access Pass?
I thought they were the same thing.
No.
They're not the same thing.
No, the Vehicle Access Pass is only for use on fish and wildlife land, and it comes with certain hunting and fishing licenses, like your combo license or your big game. If you buy that license, you receive a complimentary Vehicle Access Pass, and that allows you access on fish and wildlife lands, recognizing that part of your license fees go to lands operations and maintenance on fish and wildlife lands. But because parks and DNR...
Oh.
don't receive monies from our hunting and fishing licenses, that's why that vehicle access pass would not be used on parks or DNR lands. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I guess what my confusion was is when I buy my hunting and fishing license, I get the access to department lands, but then in addition, I have to buy the other one as well. They both look exactly the same, and I just thought they were the same thing applied to different lands, but your explanation cleared that up. Thank you.
No, and your concern, Commissioner, is a good one. In fact, that was included in the business plan recommendation that was done by a third party to do better branding and then to make the two passes identifiable and to make them more different, because you're absolutely correct. They're difficult to distinguish one from the other. We hear that from constituents since the implementation of the Discover Pass. So it's a very good point, and we're working on it.
Thank you.
No problem. Any other Discover Pass questions? Okay. The other bills of interest that I listed, I just wanted to kind of give a snapshot and a summary for folks who have seen the different bills that are coming through. These are all bills that we've been working pretty closely with either the prime sponsors or different constituent groups. For example, the Dungeness Crab Fishery, we've been working with Representative Litton, and it just increases the Dungeness Crab Fishery license on one vessel from 2 to 3. They're all good little bills, and I kind of wanted to just show all the good work that folks and staff are doing. Some of these bills we didn't like initially, but then we've worked with the primes. We've got some good relationships going with the prime sponsors. We're able to fix those and come to a supporting role. One of note, seafood labeling is one enforcement worked really closely with. Representative Blake and Ranker. Both of those bills in the House and Senate are already in rules, and we're anticipating that those will come out hopefully here pretty soon. We've got another one, the Yakima River Basin Water Management. I think Joe has mentioned that bill in the past. That bill is up for hearing in House Capital Budget this next week, and that's something that we've been in strong support over. We've got a voter safety bill that has been dropped. We had a hearing in Law and Justice on the Senate side. The House bill has still not yet been heard, but I know this is a bill enforcement's been working pretty closely with Parks and Washington State Patrol and some of the other enforcement groups out there. And then finally, we have an aquatic invasive species bill that we worked with Senator Honeyford. He has a strong interest in protecting the state against aquatic invasive species. So we dropped a bill last week that would take a bite at some of the provisions that we had in the original bill that was 70-some pages. We're taking a few of the sections and trying to do those this year. He wants to help. Of note, Senator Honeyford would like to do a $10,000 proviso, and that would allow us to implement a pass. It's a passport system that they have in Idaho for inspections. He likes that system. It's just helping us with AIS, the aquatic invasive species. So are there any questions on any of those bills? I didn't know if I need to run through anything in depth. That's kind of why I did a pretty good summary on those. But those are just real positive bills that we've got right now. And I just wanted to say overall, it's been a little bit different feel. We haven't had, we're involved in a lot of bills, but I don't think there's a lot of like attacks directly at Fish and Wildlife. There are those bad bills out there, but it does seem to be a little bit different feel. And really, we're focusing a lot of our energy on wolves and Discover Pass.
Mr. Vice Chair, I have a question.
Commissioner Mankin?
Yeah, could you expand a little bit on SHB 1071 and 5543, the first one under bills of interest? I don't understand exactly what that means in terms of harvesting chum salmon. Is that for the roe? And how does that change the existing situation?
It is actually getting us into partnerships, whereas the individuals can harvest the chum to help pay for the costs of managing the hatchery. But we still have our staff employed at the hatchery. And Joe wants to say something.
Commissioner Mankin, this is Joe Storp. I think the difference, the major difference in this bill versus House Bill 1951 that passed 3 or 4 years ago is it allows for the selection of an individual subcontractor who, as Ann said, would then be allowed to capture all the chum, or as many chum salmon as they could, returning to those couple of Hoodsport hatcheries, and the proceeds of that would go to the hatchery support. So it allows for an individual subcontractor. This wasn't a bill we were even really consulted on, so I'm not sure what all is behind it, other than it's similar to a bill that was before the legislature last year that came out of a coalition of fishermen. So.
And with this, it was amended so that it was only the Hoodsport area, as well as it's to take recognition of the tribes. And I know there were some concerns from the tribes on this bill, and it's been amended to allow for that as well.
So I'm assuming that it would go to the high bidder like it has in the past?
It doesn't say that.
Whoa.
I think the notion here, and I may be wrong, is just to assure the continued production of chum from those couple of hatcheries for the purse seiners, and you know, so that we wouldn't reduce production as a lower priority under a budget cut scenario, and there's just some continued certainty in the future of a harvest for them.
Well, the harvest of chum salmon in recent years the value of chum salmon has gone up significantly because of the price of roe in places like China and Japan.
That's right.
Offshore sales. So, I mean, as I recall, that the state was generating significantly more revenue under our recent regulations on that, and I'd sure hate to see that decline or go away.
No, that's correct, Commissioner, although I don't know those two particular hatcheries. I'm not sure what their contribution is to the overall roe sales that American Canadian, our contractor, has gone through this last year, but that's something that we could look at.
Yeah, I think we need to follow that fairly closely.
We generated about $700,000 the last two sessions under our new contract. That money goes, 80% of that money goes to the 14 regional fisheries enhancement groups. So it's been a nice offset for some federal dollar losses they've experienced, as well as, you know, giving us some more money there too.
Right. Thank you.
Vice Chair Duvia, Commissioner Jennings.
Commissioner Jennings, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask on two other pieces of legislation moving forward under that same section of other bills of interest, the sea cucumber dive fishery. Just curious about the functions of the sea cucumber dive fishery account changes. And then also under the next one, the Yakima River Basin Water Management, I see they talk about the Department of Ecology, but one of our concerns when we got briefed on it was if we were going to be asked as an agency to take the lead on purchasing the lands and paying back the land trust that we'd be purchasing them from, we really wanted a dedicated account that didn't, that wasn't sort of bundled with the rest of our capital requests. I'm probably not saying that properly, but sort of where we are with those two pieces of legislation.
So I can speak to the sea cucumber. Essentially, that's just extending the time frame for the buyback, that they're trying to get it down to 20. I think they have 27 right now. And then when it's talking about the collections of the depositing those surcharges, those would go back to the users once we've hit the buyback amount, which I believe is 20, but I can get back to you on that. So
that's all I needed. Thank you
on
that one.
On the Commissioner Jennings, on the Yakima River Basin Water Management bills 1414 and Senate Bill 5367. Remember those bills are about this pretty remarkable set of agreements,
right?
You know, among a wide variety of interests, and there are four legislative discussions going on. One is passing of a policy bill that would authorize the program to move forward and create an account. Another has to do with, and this is probably budget language, authorizing Fish and Wildlife to enter into a lease negotiation with Forterra, who would make the original purchase of this $9,700 million piece of property. It will allow us enter into an agreement to buy it back from them over 10, 20 years. There's discussion on these two bills related to the immediate next biennium budget needs, capital budget of about $45 million that would come from general obligation bonds. And then there's also some discussion, like the Columbia River, of a overarching authorization for the entire Yakima Basin planning effort. And that could read something like, you know, the state agencies are authorized to spend up to $500 million over the next 20 years in pursuit of the implementing the plan, the basin plan. And those dollars would go to a set of issues around water storage, around fish passage and habitat improvement, and around land acquisition. So the notion of having the money coming towards land acquisition as a DFW interest separated from the rest of the capital budget would occur by the establishment of the accounts that are anticipated there. Now, that's not to say that there wouldn't be competition for capital dollars, whether it's general obligation dollars or other sorts of bonding arrangements that involve private banks and entities, but it would give a kind of a overall umbrella blessing to the plan, and then each legislative session, each legislature would have the opportunity as to how to fund that plan for any given year.
Thank you.
So that's essentially all I had, unless there are any specific questions about what I'm hearing over across the street or any other bills.
Mr. Vice Chair, I had a couple of questions also.
Go ahead, Commissioner Perry.
Thank you. The bill 1112 that indicates that the department would have to provide a basis for decisions that they make. How much of an impact would that be on the department? How much extra work and what form would that documentation have to take?
In answer to your question, Commissioner, I believe what we're planning on doing is just publishing the bibliography of the science behind the decisions that are made to a place on the website. So staff time is going to be really minimal. I think the fiscal note, it was less than $50,000. I think if I were to wager a guess, don't hold me to it, but like $10,000 or $20,000 tops. So a very minimal fiscal impact.
Also on the last time we talked, Bill 1189 on the commission composition, that had been pulled. Is that still off the table?
That is, in fact. In speaking to the chair and the prime sponsor of the bill, I feel confident that it will probably not see the light of day again past cutoff. So I think it's probably dead. Nothing dies officially, but I think that we can say that one is as good as dead.
Okay. One more. There was a bill that, and I don't have the bill number, unfortunately, but that I asked you about last time that seemed to put the Department of Fish and Wildlife in not a very good position, and that was a bill that essentially struck the Department of Fish and Wildlife in a whole lot of approvals of various permits and developments around the state that may affect particularly fish. Do you recall that bill, and is it still alive?
Well, it's still alive because we haven't hit cutoff, but I believe if it's the same one I'm thinking of, you're right, it was, I think, more of a message bill that comes back every year. I'm looking for the bill number, but I know which one it is, and I don't believe that it's going anywhere. And if I recall, I don't even think it got a hearing this year.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Any more questions for Ann? Thanks very much, Ann. Nice job. Appreciate the help and insights you give us today.